to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to an adventure in history. We are week two without our chief, without our executive director, Mac Burns. He's not able to join me, but that's okay because I brought in a very special guest, Claire Thompson. Thank you for being here.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Did you know you were going to be my co-host today?
I did not.
No, yeah. And I almost started without you. In fact, I did start with you without you. I will admit that. And you're like, but that's okay. I'm still here.
Yeah, I'm here now.
Ready to go. We're going to talk about you, and we're also going to talk about Camp Kawana Long, which we both love.
Yes.
And we'll love to talk about. But before we get to that, let's do a little This Day in History. And it's This Day in History for tomorrow, which is June 15th, 1667. And you can tell me if you have any comments about any of these. That's usually what Mac gives his feedback on every single one. So
1667, that's a way back.
That's a little ways back. Yeah, yeah. We weren't around back then, anyone, if anyone's thinking that. French physician Jean-Baptiste Denis performs the first blood transfusion on a feverish boy using lamb's blood. The boy recovers, but two other patients die from the procedure, leading to centuries-long bans on transfusions. Yep. I mean, it kind of blew my mind for lots of reasons, right? Like 1667, there was a blood transfusion.
Yeah, to think of a lamb.
Right. And it actually worked. I mean,
right.
One-third of the cases.
I mean, there are a lot of times in history where people are experimenting and things that on humans probably right. weren't the best at the time, but and lead to great advancements later.
And yeah, and I mean, the sanitation conditions alone, right? But then centuries. I mean, we're talking hundreds of years it was banned from doing that. Now I can't even imagine, right, if we didn't have. So, okay. 1752, moving forward. Benjamin Franklin and his son test the relationship between electricity and lightning by flying a kite in a thunderstorm.
The infamous kite day.
I know.
Here we have festivals for them.
Yes. But also, like, I feel like as a mom, like, every mom out there is, like, cringing.
Like, about going out in a lightning
what
storm?
Were you thinking? A dad taking his son out? No. Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. Okay. But I guess it led to some good information. 1775, George Washington was named Commander-in-Chief of the Colonies by the Continental Congress. He was later elected as the first president, obviously, of the United States in 1789. And he laid the foundations for the role of president during his first term, and he served a second term. And he even refused that third term because he wanted to retire, and he then did pass away 2 years later. But that kind of set the standard then. So two terms, and then you're out.
I know, I did hear that. Yeah. He wanted to keep going, but it was pretty much him that was like, nope, we don't want to do that.
Right.
We want new people coming in and fresh ideas. And
especially since he'd kind of been in charge since 1775, mm-hmm. right? So we didn't have all of the government in place yet, but so kind of interesting information. 1836, Arkansas is admitted to the Union as the 25th state. 1846, moving ahead 10 years, the United States and Britain signed the Oregon Treaty, establishing the border between Canada and the United States as latitude 49 degrees north. This is joint occupation of the Oregon Territory by two countries. Have you ever driven through Salem? I mean, it's not just through Salem, where they actually have the 40...
The sign, yeah.
9 degrees, yeah. I mean, I pass it and I'm always like, oh, that's so interesting, so odd, but also, yeah, pretty cool. 1864, Arlington National Cemetery was established when 200 acres of Confederate General Robert E. Lee's estate in Virginia. It had been seized by the United States government and was then authorized for a national cemetery. I didn't know that. I'd been to Arlington before. Have you ever been to the cemetery?
It's driven past it.
Right. It's very powerful. It's a very large piece of land.
Yes.
But I didn't realize that it was his property.
Like, now we're going to turn it to a cemetery.
Right. 1877, Henry O. Flipper, this is 1877. What's the key here? He becomes the first African-American to graduate from the United States Military Academy at West Point. It's pretty early. 1898, the U.S. House of Representatives approves the annexation of Hawaii. 1932, Gaston Means is sentenced to 15 years for fraud in the Lindbergh baby kidnapping. It's not all good news on this day in history. I know. I didn't warn you. 1916, this is a fun one, though. President Woodrow Wilson signs a bill incorporating the Boy Scouts of America. And Mac would have tons to say about that because he's a scout leader. His son's been in Boy Scouts. It's now the Scouts.
The Scouts, which is very inclusive.
It is.
That's a big thing. I mean, that's a huge movement in the last couple of years.
Right.
But they're a big part of camp as well, that we have the Scouts out there.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Oh, I love that. I didn't even know that. Oh, see, what a good tie-in. Yeah. I didn't even know. Okay, that was 1916. And then 1974, Simon & Schuster releases All the President's Men. This is the first definitive book about the Watergate scandal. It's authored by Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, the two Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporters from the Washington Post who broke the story. 2 months after that story broke, President Richard Nixon resigns from office.
Pretty important. Our journalists, our investigative journalists.
Right. Pretty. Yeah. That was going to be my history highlight just because Mac always picks one big one. But then I was like, well, it's the book that was published. And really, I guess if I was going to say it would be the article would be that sort of definitive.
Right. But that's, I mean, making sure that we remember it and how it happened.
True.
It was civilians.
And so much more detailed than the article. And then the movie, of course, is wonderful. I've read the book and seen the movie. But I feel like it's like every print journalism's dream to write a book because you always have that limit of how many characters. Words, right? You can get in an article and then they're like, oh, but you can write hundreds more pages. And of course they had tons of notes and
I'm sure there was a lot to go through. Right. And then also, I mean, the editing process, you get rid of a lot of things as well.
True. So. Yeah. And obviously it read like a manuscript for a movie, right? Mm-hmm. Because it then became one. I'm not going to pick a history highlight of the day. I'm going to let Mac go with that because all those seemed pretty important and I didn't know which one to pick, honestly. So let's just get talking about you. So again, I have Claire Thompson here. She is the board chair for Camp Quinalong, among other things. But let's just start to learn a little bit about you. Tell me where you're from and where you grew up.
I am born and raised Gearhart, Oregon. My grandfather moved out here after his dad left and they moved his family out. And he lived out on 3rd Street in his aunt's house, his mom and his sister out there. And so then from there, I grew up on that property. They split off a little piece. My parents built a house there. And so then my parents met at Oregon State University. and so then I spent most of my life here. I spent a little time in New Jersey when I went to college for a theater out in Montclair, but I ended up back here working at a local hotel and I met my husband who's a chef, very talented chef.
Oh, I love this.
and so I worked front desk, he was a sous chef in the kitchen. And so he would bring me down plates food and you know, this was an extra plate we had and so they actually made a rule that they couldn't do that anymore.
Oh my goodness. This is another like meet cute manuscript right here.
And so from there we got married. And so that sort of, anchored me here. My parents have an excavation business. And so that my grandfather started, we literally built the streets of Cannon Beach.
Oh my goodness.
And all the infrastructure there.
So growing up, let's go back a little ways. So growing up, what were some of the things that you did around Gearhart and how much has it changed?
It's changed a lot. I just think about even the gas station that was on the corner, that's now just a field, but like we used to hitch our ponies there on the 4th of July. after the parade, we'd have hot dogs. And so a lot of that is very similar. The amount of people has changed because there's a lot more people there than there ever were.
You literally hitched a pony?
Yes.
I mean, you are not that old. So
we had ponies. Well, it was a nice place because the gas station wasn't functional anymore, but it was still there. But it was a nice covered area with a bike rack for them to tie them to while we could have lunch.
So your property in Gearhart obviously was large because you had animals.
I mean, fairly large for Gearhart standards. Absolutely. Right? And so I grew up with them in my backyard.
Oh, my goodness.
And we had a donkey as well. So they've all been moved out to my parents' farm on 26, which has a little bit more space.
Okay. And did you go riding on the beach and everything too?
We didn't. They're pretty small. Okay. They're sort of halfway, like they're not a true, they're Shetland ponies. Mm-hmm. So they're not a true pony size, but they're a little bit bigger, but not quite a horse. And so we had street carts, and sometimes when we were younger, we would ride them for sure, and learning how to drive them.
Yeah.
The team. So every 4th of July, my dad hitches them up. And for the last couple of years, we've been in Cannon Beach, but we do the Gearhart Parade as well.
And hearing about your grandfather was the one who laid the streets in Cannon Beach. Mm-hmm. What are those stories like? I mean, because Cannon Beach is so busy and so popular now, I just can't even imagine nothing being there. Who had the vision? And how did he get involved?
I'm not sure who the vision was, but he they needed someone because it was basically just like a trail, like foot trails. And they went all over the place to like there was a cabin in one space. And he's like, someone would just walk the street and go that way. And so they're like, we need to create a grid system. So you have the president's streets, how they're all nicely laid out.
Right.
With hemlock going down the middle. And so it was just bit by bit. He bought an excavator, and that's how our business was started. And so my dad still, he owns the company now, and I work for them. I've pulled my husband into it as well. My brother works for us, so it's a true family affair.
Oh, my goodness.
And we still work in Cannon Beach quite a bit. It's like...
But what's the difference now? I mean, what are you excavating now for new properties?
A lot of it's new houses. Okay. Sometimes it's old beach shacks that have seen better days. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's more up in the hills and like down towards Falcon Cove and Arch Cape, high-end homes now, which is a little bit of a difference.
I'm sure. Right.
Versus I've seen pictures. We have these old photos of my grandfather over by like the Elk Creek end where it's just grassy and there's nothing there. There's really like it's just a dune.
Oh, my goodness.
But I spent my days because even though I lived in Gearhart, my dad worked in Cannon Beach, so a lot of times we'd spend time there in the houses when they were being built, and I went to daycare down there as well. So I spent a lot of time in Cannon Beach as a child, just wandering around the houses, and it was a lot quieter back then.
Oh my gosh, for sure. So what were you thinking at that time period about what you were going to do with your career or when you grew up? Did you see this company as a vision for yourself then?
Not at all.
What were your eyes focused on?
And my parents never pushed it on us because my dad, it was sort of natural that he took over the business, but it was never pushed upon us. And so then we ended up, I went to theater school in Montclair, New Jersey, and I learned how to sew and I learned how to paint a set. So it was kind of a whirlwind experience. And then I decided to come back here. And that's when Marge found me and said, have you ever thought about being on the board of camp? And so I had started in 1999 was my first year out at camp as a camper.
Okay.
And that was the first year my mom was the head cook there.
Okay.
And so I got to go out for the summer for all 6 weeks.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I did that until I was 20 every summer.
So how old were you then, that first year?
I was going into third grade, which is the first year you can be a camper. Now it's second grade because we've added day camp, which is so seeing that evolution of camp. I mean, because it was so overrun and we were scraping by with our budget, really. Like it was always budget camp. It's a budget camp because and then I was raised in the kitchen. So we were cutting giant blocks of cheese and shredding them down so we could make mac and cheese and cutting down giant blocks of butter to make the pound blocks so we could bake, you know, goodies for the kids.
Yeah.
So we buy shredded cheese now. Yeah. Blocks of pre-cut butter.
Thank goodness.
I know, the luxury.
Yes. Oh, man. Thank goodness.
Yeah. So then I went on to staff at... as soon as they got 13 in the kitchen, doing every meal, 3 meals a day for all 6 weeks. And then I went off to school and then came back. And that's when I was on the board.
And what did you love doing at camp, aside from being in the kitchen? What were some of those fun core memories that you took away?
I loved campfire and singing songs. It's very like a bonding experience with everyone and just being silly. I love to do canoeing. I wasn't much for swimming just because I didn't like how cold
it always was. Right.
But boating, I mean, getting in the water and being able to paddle around the lake was really nice. Archery, even though I wasn't as good as my sisters, they always had a bunch of my sister, one side of her name tag, because you earn beads out there. She had tons of bullseyes, and I've only ever gotten three. Oh. So she was quite more talented than I was at that.
And it's a gem. I feel like it's a hidden gem. I feel like too, because it's you can't see it from where it's located.
No, everyone were like, "Where is it?" And I'm like, "It's behind the soccer field, so we're behind another."
But it's this idyllic little spot, right? That's on a lake. That's yes. In the tree. Very quiet back there.
And it's my friend. She'd never been there. They're from Massachusetts, and I told her to come out for our fundraiser for Rewind. And I forgot that one of the soccer camps was happening. So it was like pure chaos. They're just people crossing the street, yeah. People in the parking lot. I mean, if you've been there on a Saturday, you know how much.
During that pickup? Yes, I have.
So they went through there and they're like, "Did they send us to the wrong place?" And then they make the turn down the driveway. And she's like, "It was like I was in a Wes Anderson movie."
Yeah.
We were out in the forest with these little cabins and the lake, and it's so quiet and it's very idyllic.
So what's changed from when you first went there? Are the cabins the same? Are they?
The cabins are the same. We've added one that has heat and electricity, but the rest are
just all... one.
Just one. We've only added
the one. First time I learned about that, I was like, wow.
We've done a lot of maintenance and replacing roofs and putting in windows and adding mattresses. And so like a lot of stuff that hadn't been done for a really long time
has been done.
Has been done. So it's been, everyone comes out there and they're like, it's like going through a time warp because it's so well cared for.
And what are the reactions from the kids, especially first timers that are going to where there's no electricity? And I mean,
there's a lot of shock and awe.
Is there? I mean, do they love it?
That's a big change because homesickness, I mean, is real.
Sure.
When I was a kid, it was for your parents. Now it's for your devices.
Oh, interesting.
And so that is probably the harder for the kids being there without, like, we do have Wi-Fi, but the kids don't have devices. There's no internet use, you know?
Sure.
We might show a movie if it's a rainy day, but that's about it.
It's just all fun and play.
Yes. And that's where the kids are just purely exhausted because they're being run all day long. You're doing activities. You've got your group. You know, earning beads. You're singing songs. Or, you know, you have your three meals a day out there. And
you go to bed when it's dark, which it is darker a lot later in the summertime.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a little bit light out because it's just like we can't run them anymore. They're going to.
Right. Time to go to bed.
That's when, starts the homesickness sense in, or, you know, kids just get tired. So it's like, we got to send them to bed.
Right. Before that kicks in. Mm-hmm. So going back. So theater, tell me a little bit about that background. And were you going to get a job making sets? What was the focus?
The focus was on costume design.
Okay.
And so I lived, it was in a tower basically on campus where we had this little sewing shop, fabrics and patterns and a big table to lay them out. So I was measuring a lot of actors, and because we were responsible for the actors and the dance program. So it was hundreds, like 600 dancers and actors that we would be responsible for costuming throughout the year. And we had several productions, dance shows that we had to do. And so I even got the chance to be a designer because it was such a large school. Like, it was a state school, but we got design experience, which was huge. Most schools, you have to get a graduate degree.
What a genius idea, right? Free labor you're paying them to go to school there. And then you make all the costumes.
And people had difficulties fitting because it's a practicum. So you do get school credit for when you're working, but people had a hard time getting into their schedules, so they made it a one credit class. And so all of us were like,
sure,
we're getting one credit for this. Oh. But I've met some lifetime friends there. I built beautiful costumes and sets, and it was, I mean, probably one of the best times of my life out there, even though we were working all the time. I mean, I was there during Hurricane Sandy.
Oh, wow.
And it was during my senior project, of which I was costuming 100 actors. They were all triple cast, so it was a lot to keep track of. The spreadsheets alone were insane. But they didn't cancel it. We're like, are you going to move it out? Are you going to? And nope, they're like, same timeline. And so I was there while everyone in the cold in the costume shop, sewing things, organizing, planning things out. Yeah. And I was even displaced, was kicked out of my dorm because everything had shut down, all the electricity and everything. So they moved us to a different dorm up on campus. So it was
craziness. And did the show actually go on?
Yes, it went on. My parents came out to see it. I mean, it was a beautiful production. Carousel.
Which is I love that.
Roger Hammerstein. It's kind of a little musical. Dated. Some of it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Aren't they all
it's
now?
A little questionable, yeah. But yeah, it's catchy songs and talented actors. So.
Oh, how fun.
It was a great time. Yeah.
So you graduate.
Yes.
You have this degree.
Yes.
What are you going to do with it?
I started working. I worked in Hoboken on the waterfront. They had outdoor theater. I mean, we were doing 1800s plays in sweltering heat. It was like 90 degrees and I'm steaming like wool costumes. And it was a little bit of a trip. And I was lucky enough to rent a room at my friend's place in Jersey City. Was not glamorous by any means, but right. I mean, walking to the train station and going in. I worked on TV for a hot minute as sort of a PA, the elementary show.
Oh, yeah. It's a great one.
Driving around the city. I mean, spending so much money on parking, not my money, but I was like, this is insane.
Right.
Picking up clothes. And I worked with the designer and making that happen. And it was just like, this is a lot. And it's a lot of hustle. I mean, out there for all of those behind the scenes, people putting productions together, whether they be for TV, film, or theater, they're hustlers. You don't get any perks. You don't get any, I mean, you really have to work for it. A lot of it, like with costume design, they're like, here's your budget. A lot of them's like $1,000, $1,500
oh my gosh.
To do a whole production. That includes all of the costumes and your fee.
How does that even, do they want you to just buy one like ream of material?
A lot of it, I mean, you're renting, bank, borrow, you're going to schools. I mean, a lot of schools have huge costume stocks that you can borrow from. But it is really hard work. And I was like, I don't know if I can mentally take this all the time.
Right.
If this is a whole career, it's going to be a lot of this. And being by yourself, it's very lonely. So that's when I decided to come back. And I was like, I need to reset and figure out what I want to do next.
Because yes. I'm like,
this is not it. This is not, yeah. I mean, I'm going to wear myself out by the time I'm, 25. And at the time I was only like 20.
And not make any money
and
doing
not make
it.
Any money. Right. I'm like, I'm going to have to be calling my parents all the time or figure, I don't know. It's like, it's.
Yeah. They missed that class in college, right?
Right. The financial side of it is, I mean, because they're spending a lot of it on the talent and a lot on the materials.
Oh, how interesting. I hadn't thought about, though, that it's the coordination of outfits, not always the creation.
Yes.
So it's the finding them. That's interesting.
And ironically, a lot of it is Oregon Shakespeare. They have a huge stock that they ship all around the world. So, and they have whole shows. So a lot of times, like Oregon Shakes, they'll have like a whole Shakespeare production and you can rent that entire show.
Okay. But then it needs modifications per actor.
Yes. So you'll hire someone that will be like a wardrobe. So I've worked a lot in wardrobe who will put it on, do those modifications, and not even a designer level, depending on what your budget is.
Wow.
But they'll just mount the whole thing and hope, take the measurements of all your actors and send them off. And that's the costumes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you end up here. Is this when you go to work at the hotel?
Yes.
And what do you want to just want to say the name of the hotel that you worked at?
I worked at the Stephanie Inn.
We love the Stephanie Inn. Yes.
And I had never been there as a child. My parents went there often and they're like, kids aren't allowed. And so I was like, I didn't even know where it was. It was such a secret. And then I was like, oh, it's just here.
Right. Yeah. And it's local family.
And then I'm like, it's 12 and older. We could have gone there. Right. My parents, I mean, there were four of us and they just like did not. They're like, we need some time away. And they were actually, our business dug it out originally when they built it.
Oh, I love that.
Steve Martin. Yeah. So that it's sort of a special place for my family. And what a beautiful thing to do when they opened the inn. They invited all of the contractors and people who had worked on the inn to stay the first night. And
oh my
so
goodness.
My parents got to go and enjoy it. Yeah, isn't that, that's such a sweet, because it's a really nice place. I mean,
very nice.
And so my parents kept going, so I'm like, they're customers for life now.
Also a nice little soft start too, yeah. Right? Like these people already like us.
Right, they already know the building.
Yeah, they'll tell us what's wrong, but in a nice way.
And maybe even help us fix it if there's something, if it's a contractor, it's like, oh, we got to do a paint touch up here or fix the carpet in this room, which happened. I went through a remodel there and it's a lot of coordination. I mean, that production degree definitely comes in handy, figuring out the flow of everything and figuring out when you know, rooms can open, furniture comes in, like all of that stuff. Even just feeding the crew.
Right. This is putting those systems in place.
Yes.
Okay. So at what point do you get connected again with Camp Quanalong?
That's what I was like. When did I come in? I believe it was 2019 because I was thinking.
So pre-COVID.
It was pre-COVID. It was almost like, right. It was like that fall, I believe. I was looking at the calendar and we had no idea it was coming. I went on a trip to New Jersey and in December and then we came back and it hit and... that was a tough summer trying to figure out how we were going to get through. And the first year we didn't have camp. That was like one of the first summers since the program started that we couldn't do it.
Heartbreaking. Yeah.
And then the next year we were able to adapt and become a day camp.
Okay.
So we did the entire summer outdoors, no sleepover, and I think it was a huge godsend for the families because it was like, what do you do with our kids? They've been inside on their laptops with, you know, the school.
Yeah, like going teaching. To school. Yeah.
And the kids, I mean, they forgot how to interact with people.
Right.
And just socializing with their peers, like that was all missed. And so it was a huge undertaking. And I was part of the process of applying for PPP loans so that we could pay our employees and make sure that we could get through that summer. So that was huge.
And what a great experience, truly. I mean, to get these kids just out and doing those, like you said, those unplugged activities.
Oh, absolutely.
With kids.
Social, emotional health and well-being of kids is number one. And I mean, I never have to like argue or explain the importance of it because everyone just like they get it. They're like, if summer camp, either I really wanted to go there and never got to, or I loved my time at summer camp is usually the two responses.
And what's the mix of local kids versus those from out of town?
Well, it's actually grown because it was 50-50. And we've had a big push to try and get as many Clatsop County kids. We've had to limit how many weeks they can come. So we get 1 week of registration. If there are opening spots, we can put you can come for a second one possibly. Okay. But I mean, now it's like 80-20.
Oh my goodness.
In favor of local kids. I mean, we have wait lists usually for every week and we push as much as we can to get every kid in. But I mean, how the age splays is an issue, like trying to figure out. I mean, you can't put a fourth grader with a seventh grader in the same cabin.
Sure.
So trying to make sure we fill it as smart as possible, but giving every kid we can the opportunity to go.
And it's very popular.
Very popular. We try to keep it very affordable. We're probably half, if not a third, the price of most other camps.
And you offer scholarships as well.
We call them Sparky Ships.
Sparky Ships to make it accessible.
For kids that they can apply for it. And so most of the time, it's not even for a full ride. It's just for a portion. Like we can, you know, pay $100 if you guys could help us with the rest. So we try to work it so we can maximize that. We usually end up awarding scholarships to about 70 to 80 kids every summer.
And where can people learn about Camp Quanalong?
CampQuanalong.org. I've done a lot of updating. I mean, I'm always changing things on the website, but that's a great spot. We have our annual adult weekend.
Yes, Rewind, Camp Rewind.
That I started. This will be our fourth year.
Oh, how exciting.
Over the last 3 years, we've been able to raise $150,000 for camp.
And we're going to run out of time because I'm going to cut you off. But I want to go to Camp Rewind this year. And that, too, there's information on the website about that as well. But it's adults only.
Adults only.
Back at camp.
We're there for the kids.
I love it. Okay. Claire Thompson, she's the board chair for Camp Quanalong. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time and for bringing this wonderful camp to our kids.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.
This is KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook, and streaming live at KMUN.org.